back to a few more topics in this chapter on the detection of events. We saw the detection of the cure is complex, which is a very easy to detect event that is unique and distinct in the ECG. We also saw the detection of spike and wave, which is not so distinct, and the methods that we saw, cross-correlation, template matching, matched filters, appear to work reasonably well, although we haven't tested them with a large database and so on, but the general idea has been demonstrated. Now, detection of the P wave and also the T wave in the ECG is not so easy. The detection of the P wave is difficult in particular as it is a small wave. It has an ill-defined and variable shape. It's a little bump. And you may say that it looks like a smooth, normal Gaussian-type curve, but the duration is known in a general range of 60 to 80 milliseconds, but it's not very clear. There could be some waves that are much smaller and shorter in duration, and it could be placed in a background of noise of varying size and origin. And in many channels in the ECG, the P wave may not be seen at all. It could be a perfectly flat signal with some small variations or undulations. So let's consider developing an algorithm to detect the P wave in the signal. That's the problem proposed here, but the solution is not so easy. Hengeveld and van Bemmel, many years ago, in the 70s again, proposed a method where they said, detect the QRS, delete it, and replace with the baseline. That's QRS is the biggest wave in an ECG, typically. Sometimes the T wave could be large. The P wave will not be so big, but the P wave could be well-defined or could be obscure. The QRS is fairly well-defined almost always and typically is the largest, but sometimes the T wave could also be large and sometimes the T wave could also be sharp. But QRS typically is the largest and the sharpest wave in the ECG and is clearly identifiable using one of the algorithms we saw. So Hengeveld and van Bemmel said, detect that first and get rid of it. Detect the QRS, delete it, and in that portion, just put the baseline. So you have to know what is the baseline, so you need a method to detect the baseline, which is typically a few samples before the Q point that you detect, and a few samples after the S point you detect, but that may not be reliable if there is ST segment elevation or depression. So you may want to look for the interbeat interval between successive beats and look for the baseline there. The PQ segment is typically equal to the baseline and flat in most cases. So getting the baseline is not so obvious. And then they say the resulting signal is bandpass filtered with minus 3 dB points at 3 Hz and 11 Hz. So they wanted to extract the components related to the P wave only, which is a very slow wave, and they use this band. The search interval is defined as QT maximum, the interval between Q and T, equal to 2/9 of RR plus 250 milliseconds. So this again is based upon experimental observations. And then the maximum and minimum values are found in all three VCG leads. This was applied to vector cardiograms, where there are three leads that are placed mutually orthogonal in the X, Y, and Z directions. And So the maximum and minimum values are found from the end of the preceding T wave to the onset of the QRS. So you need to know where the previous T wave ended, and that is the estimate, the QT maximum interval. So go back from the current QRS location, the amount that we saw there, this much. And that is the end of the preceding wave, and to the onset of the QRS that you detected now, the P wave must be somewhere there. That signal is rectified and thresholded at 50% and 75% of the maximum. And you get a ternary or three-level signal. The P wave is a fairly smooth wave, but the waveform is not important. They reduce the detail to just three levels, three steps. I'll show the example later on. The cross-correlation is computed of the result with a ternary template derived in a manner similar to this procedure from a representative set of P waves. So they had a database of P waves to which they applied this procedure and created a ternary template with three steps or three possible values. And the peak in the cross-correlation corresponds to the P location in the original ECG. So they did not use a template of the P wave, but instead used a template obtained by thresholding the T wave into three levels. There are a few important points. The algorithm overcomes the dominance of the QRS, because that is always big and sharp, by first detecting and deleting it, which is interesting. And the cross-correlation is computed not with an original P wave, which is not well-defined, and cross-correlation may not give you reliable results, but with a ternary wave that is derived from a bank or a database of P waves. And that represents a simplified template of the P wave. The signal is also reduced to a ternary wave in the interval between the Q wave that you detect using a QRS detection algorithm and the end of the preceding T wave by using that QT maximum interval. So here is an illustration. This is an example of an ECG. This is an ECG, by the way. Doesn't look like one. There is no P wave here. It is there, but it's very, very low. The ST segment is not flat. The QRS is only one positive spike. And the T wave is somewhere there, but it's not of interest here. So the QRS complex is detected and replaced by a straight line. That straight line must be equal to this baseline, which is estimated there. And this result is bandpass filtered. This is from the Q wave currently detected going back the interval of QT maximum. So this is the end of the preceding T wave. So this part is then bandpass filtered and amplified, and what you see here is the bandpass filtered version of this and enlarged. Let me check the caption. C is after bandpass filter, yeah. D after rectification, okay. And E after thresholding. So this bandpass filtered signal now, because it's a bandpass, the output could be positive and negative, whereas here it might be all positive. In this case, it appears to be all positive about the baseline. So here is the baseline. Now, to this, two thresholds are applied at 50% and 75% of the maximum after rectification. So this is the rectified version and the two thresholds at 50 and 75% of that maximum. And then you get a ternary signals, three levels, one, two, three. So there are some variations. The P wave is somewhere there. We don't know which of this is the P wave, but typically it is expected it is somewhere here. This is the template that was created by applying the same technique to a number of P waves that were observed and documented and extracted from a database. So this is a reference template that represents on the average the result of application of the same procedures to a number of P-wave segments. So it looks something like this. Now, a P-wave is a monophasic wave. So it is simply a smooth wave. That has been reduced to this format of a ternary wave with two parts because of the bandpass filtering. Now here, you have something similar, but it is not the same. But still, when a cross-correlation is performed between this template and this result for the current signal, there is a peak at this position. And that indicates the P wave. Now, if you had performed cross-correlation with a real P-wave, you would have had nothing, because really there is nothing there that is directly visible as a P-wave that we normally expect to see. So that's the advantage here. So it's an interesting technique that seemed to work well. I don't have the statistics here as to how well it worked. But the interesting part is you detect the dominant wave and remove it, and then create a template which is not of the original but some processed version, and then do cross-correlation applying the same procedures to the signal. Yeah? The use would be to detect the atrial rhythm and see if there is any difference between the atrial rhythm and the ventricular rhythm. If you just detect QRS, you only get the ventricular rhythm. There are some diseases where there could be some there could be variation in the interval between the P wave and the QRS. If the AV node is not inserting the proper delay, if there is dissociation between the atria and the ventricles, if the AV node is diseased, then there is a problem in the gap that is essential between the contraction of the atria and the contraction of the ventricles. So this would help in detecting such diseases, such cardiovascular abnormalities. Of course, there are situations where the P wave is superimposed by a premature ventricular contraction. Then this doesn't work. You don't see the P wave. When there is a premature ventricular contraction triggered by an ectopic node from the ventricles, at the same time that the atria are contracting and generating the P wave, the ventricles also contract because of the ectopic firing, ectopic focus firing, and then the P wave is completely lost within the ectopic beat, which could be very big, much bigger than the normal QRS. So then obviously no method will work. But there are cases where there are multiple P waves also. This method is interesting, but it has limitations. There are situations where if you refer to the book by Rushmer, there are many examples where the atria have their own rhythm, the ventricles have their own rhythm. The AV node in between is not passing all the impulses from the sinoatrial node. So the atria could be contracting at a certain rate, let's say 80 beats a minute. The ventricles could be contracting at 30 beats a minute or 40 beats a minute. So there could be two or three P waves with no QRS. Or every other atrial contraction may be passed and the other, every other one blocked. So there could be a 2-to-1 block. So one SA node impulse is passed, so you get a PQRST. The next one, there is a P wave, but it is not passed. There is no QRS. Nothing happens. Then another P wave and then QRS. In that case, again, this will have a problem because the search interval is defined with reference to the QRS. So this method will not yield the expected or desired result unless the search interval is changed. If the search is always with reference to the QRS and then so many milliseconds before, then the missed QRS beats will also be missed by the algorithm, and the preceding P waves will not be counted. Okay. So I'm giving some of these methods because they are classical methods published in the literature in the 70s and 80s when these subjects were investigated using signal processing algorithms. Later on, other techniques came on, including imaging techniques with ultrasound and so on. And those techniques have a completely different basis. We are studying signal processing, so I'm discussing these. They are interesting and provide some ideas, but all of them have limitations in that, as we discussed now, this method detects the P wave, but will it address atrioventricular dissociation? No. Will it work in the presence of premature ventricular contractions? No. Gritsali and others, they proposed another approach, another method, to detect all of the waves, QRS, T and P waves, using one common approach. They said In each one of these signals, we will detect one first, the biggest one, remove, and then detect the other, remove, and then detect the other. There are three. And for each one of them, they proposed a variation of essentially the same idea that they call the length transformation. And the length transformation is defined for multiple ECG channels. Given a set of ECG signals from n simultaneous channels, could be VCG or could be multiple leads acquired together, they assume there would be many, so that if you do not see the P wave or the T wave in some leads, hopefully they will be present in some other leads. So this measure is computed across many channels of ECG acquired simultaneously with the expectation that the P and the T waves will show up in at least some of them. If you happen to get a lead where there is where the P wave or the T wave is very weak, and that is the only lead available to you, it may be difficult or impossible to detect them. So Grizzelli and others said, let's say that you have n channels of the ECG, 12 leads, but typically you don't get 12 simultaneously, maybe 3 leads in the case of vector cardiograms, or many of the new machines now take 3 channels simultaneously, such as lead 1, 2, 3. Then the length transformation, as they called it, the word length is a bit strange, but that's what they called it, LNWT. It's a function of 3 variables. N is the duration of this window over which this averaging or summation is performed. W is the width of the time window for another integration here. And then T is just time. This is shown in analog form. The integration is shown in analog or continuous time form. The summation here is over the number of channels of the ECG, which of course is discrete. So J going 1 to N is over the number of channels of ECG that are available to you. What they do is simply take the derivative of each channel and integrate that, square of that. First sum the derivative square over all the channels, take the square root, and if you want, I can put a factor. If you want to average, you can put 1 over n, but it's not important. And then integrate that over time in a moving window. And if you want, you can change that to summation if you're doing it in discrete time. So all that is happening here is derivative, square, and integrate over time, which is what we did for QRS detection. The difference is you do this over multiple channels of the ECG and add them all up. So the procedure computes the total squared derivative of the signals across the various channels available, how many ever you have, and integrates the summed quantity over a moving time window. So it's moving window averaging. And because you're doing this over multiple channels, the P and T are expected to be well defined in at least 1 or 2 or how many ever channels, a few channels out of the total. So what they did is first detect the QRS by applying a threshold to this LNWT with W set equal to the average QRS width of 80 or 90 milliseconds. And then they detect the QRS, mark the endpoints of QRS by a pulse, and QRS complexes are replaced by the isoelectric baseline, just as we saw in the previous method. And then you do the same with the T wave. The T wave is typically bigger than the P wave. The duration of the T wave is also longer, 120 to 140 or 160 milliseconds. I don't remember. More than 100 milliseconds. So you do the same, detect the T waves. You know that the T wave has to be after the QRS. So the search interval will be defined appropriately, and you already have detected the QRS. So you mark the P wave and then replace that with the baseline. And then what is remaining should be the P waves. There could be noise, but hopefully all the noise will have been removed by other filters before these steps. So do the same and then detect P waves. And the P waves are expected to be before the QRS. But in this, again, if you don't put limits on the search interval for the P wave, you may be able to detect extra P waves. There's no template matching performed, so you may detect other waves and mislabel them as P waves if you do not put a search interval. So whether this will help in detecting AV dissociation, atrioventricular dissociation, I don't know. The paper does not say that. That's a possible application. So here is an illustration. These are the three channels that they used of ECG. The P wave is not very clear in any of them. The T wave is reasonable here, but not so much here. Here it is fairly obvious. The P wave is very small, but they marked the QRS complex here. That corresponds to all the channels, of course. The T wave here, and detected the P waves in these points. So the same idea that we saw earlier was extended. The operation is the same, what they call the length transform. It's a strange name, but that's what they called it. Okay, any questions about these methods we have discussed so far?